Everyone, that was better. So this morning it's a little different because for those who come regularly know that usually I base my talks commenting on some aspect of the Buddhist tradition. I mean, there's 2,600 years there of tradition and many times of teachings and practitioners right up to the modern day. But this morning, I want to base my teaching on A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And this is not the first time I've done this. It's actually become sort of a tradition in our community. What just began as a one-time affair has become a tradition. But I think it's important because I think it's a very meaning. It's always been a very meaningful book to me, and I think a very profound message is in it. And again, it is a story that I think we are all familiar with, if not the full story of the Christmas Carol, at least Scrooge has entered the consciousness. I believe even as a duck. So anyhow, I think at all ages, Scrooge is known. But I think it is often presented as a cautionary tale about extremism. Sort of, Scrooge is an extreme figure. He is a miser. He lives only for business, and we'll read from it. So it's very easy to kind of see him as somebody very extreme and very different than ourselves, because I think very few of us would identify with him. So it is sort of a story that's about somebody else. But I think it's really a story about us. And I think it's a profound story. It is a very hopeful and optimistic story. It is a very wise story. It is a story of a transformation, of redemption, of healing, all in one night. I think that's what makes it very special. And again, it was written by Dickens in the, in the middle of the 1800s. Time when there was a lot of social dislocation in his country of England. Industrialization was in full swing, so there was a whole new kind of poverty, social inequality, a number of the issues that plagued deeply our world were becoming much more extreme then. And Charles Dickens very much, because of his own background, growing up in those situations, but also because he was very socially concerned about what was going on in his society, and especially for children. So, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. So again, for those you've heard me do it before, those of you who all know the story, pretend you don't know it. Okay? You know, I think that's the wonderful thing about stories is that we always want to approach them fresh, like we've never heard it before, so we have the opportunity to see what happens within us as we listen. If we listen to the story thinking we know the story or we know the moral of the story, we won't have a fresh experience. We'll have an old experience, the one we had before. And we'll just be experiencing our thoughts and our judgments about the story rather than experiencing it fresh. So just, even though the children are having their own program now, be like a child, right? So when you hear the words once upon a time, you just kind of relax. once upon a time. So once upon a time, in the beginning chapter, we meet Scrooge. And Scrooge is, as I said earlier, is very quickly painted as a miser. But he's more than a miser. He is alone, you know. And I think it's, again, we can focus on his miserliness, but I think what's also very meaningful in the beginning, he's somebody totally alone, totally in himself, in his own little world. And in his own little world, which we see as utter misery, it is his world, and he thinks he's happy in it. And he thinks that his way of living is the right way. Is that, you know, I mean, you get it. He thinks his way is the right way, and the whole world is a bunch of fools. And only he has the truth of what's meaningful in life. And he's totally encapsulated in that. And even though when we see him, we see this kind of miserable, lonely curmudgeon, you know, miserable human being, he thinks he's what? He's got it made. He's living in his truth. We all know that. So we meet this miserable person, and we see him working on Christmas Eve. This drama unfolds on Christmas Eve. He's working on Christmas Eve. We meet his assistant, Bob Cratchit, who he's just totally miserable to. We meet his nephew, who comes in, you know, full of Christmas cheer. You know, Scrooge gives him his famous bah humbug in relationship to his Christmas greetings of his very upbeat nephew. And of course the nephew says, "Christmas a humbug, uncle, you don't mean that." And Scrooge says, "I do. Merry Christmas. What right do you have to be merry? What reason do you have to be merry? You're poor enough." So we see, happiness equals money. No money, no happy. No money, no even right to be happy. And again, this is not a concept unknown in our society these days. And then the nephew says, "Come, what right have you to be dismal? What reason do you have to be morose? You're rich enough." And so anyhow, it's just more bah humbug. The uncle says, "All right." He kind of backs up. "All right, don't be angry, uncle." He says, "What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas. Out with your Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money, a time for finding yourself a year older but not an hour richer, a time for balancing your books and having every item in them with a round of dozen of mouths presented dead against you. So if I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on their lips should be boiled in their own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through their heart." So, you know, Scrooge is no lightweight, as you can see. He knows how to dish it out. But again, in his world, what? It's all about money, right? And if you don't have money, not only do you have a right to be, not only do you not have a right to be happy, but you have no right to even to attempt to do anything other than what? Than work. Hey. And then, of course, his nephew is the opposite. This is his sister's son, who has died. "There are many things from which I derive good, by which I haven't profited, I dare say." And again, this is Dickens talking, right, through the nephew. "Christmas among the rest. He said, I've always thought of Christmas as a time, beside all the sacredness, you know, all the religiosity around Christmas, as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave. and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it's never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good, will do me good, and I say God bless it. Again, how wonderful. I mean, this is this other way of looking at life, which I think is very congruent with our way of looking, which is, you know, to look at the sameness of humanity. And what is the sameness? That we're all rushing to the grave, right? Rich or poor, whatever, man or woman, whatever differences that unites us. We are all here temporarily, and we are all fellow passengers on this journey. And that kind of wakes us up to how we want to be with each other on this journey. Because we know one thing about a miser is they what? They think they can take it with them. You see? Because why else would you work so hard and hoard it if you weren't hoarding it so you could always have it, right? But the reality of impermanence is you can't take it with you, and you may not always have it. And if that is the source of your happiness, you're in big trouble. The nephew goes out, and then he is visited by these two gentlemen. It is Christmas Eve, and these are respectable members of the community who are coming to him because they want to, go among the more endowed members of the community to help the poor. So they want to get a donation from him, quite simply. And they say to him, at this festive season of the year, Mrs. Scrooge, it's more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision. So I think in a certain way, even though these guys are good guys, I think Dickens is kind of being a little bit of a social critic here, you know. We should make some slight provision for the poor destitute who suffer greatly at the present time, even though they're good people, good-hearted. Many thousands are in want of common necessities. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts. And then Scrooge gives a very contemporary response, which is, are there no prisons? Right? I mean, he sort of has one solution to the problem of poverty, and the gentlemen say plenty of prisons, and the workhouses, the poorhouses where they used to put poor people, sort of semi prison conditions, and to work. And are not the poorhouses in operation? They are, returned the gentleman, even though I wish they were not. And all the poor laws and everything else, which governed very strictly poor people, are they not in effect? And he said, yes, they are. So Scrooge said, well, I was afraid when you started saying we needed some money for the poor that, you know, the prisons and the workhouses and the poor laws somehow had gone out of law. Okay. So he was very happy to hear they were still going. So the guys still continue on. Under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and some means of warmth. We choose this time of Christmas because of this time of all other years when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. And so what can we put you down for? And he says, nothing. And they, of course, are not used to this. So they say, oh, you want to be anonymous. And and Scrooge says, no, I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me, I wish, this is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make other people merry. I help support the establishments I have mentioned. You know, the prisons, the workhouses. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there. So these guys, you know, they haven't quite figured out who they're dealing with yet. So see, they say, well, many can't go there, and many would rather die. So Scrooge, being a very practical man, a man of business, he says, if they would rather die, they had better do it. and decrease the surplus population. For those of you who remember your history, there was a theory about surplus populations and how they should basically, die off. Anyhow, Scrooge ends up going, these people are not, they try to engage him in some kind of socially meaningful conversation. He basically says, this is really none of my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business, and not interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly, and he basically throws him out. So we're getting, the first chapter is really getting a picture of this man named Scrooge. And it continues on a bit until something now begins to change. If you remember, he goes home, he has his usual solitary meal, he's kind of miserable to everybody, doesn't put anything in the beggar's little bowl. People try to sing Christmas carols to him. It's all just too much for poor guy. He's just a miserable human being. So he goes home, he gets into his bed, or again, no, he's in his room, and all of a sudden he's visited by an apparition. And he says, "Dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me? Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?" Because in the beginning, Scrooge is sinking into something he ate. He sees this thing there. He says, "I do, but why do spirits walk the earth? And why have you come to me?" And the ghost replies, "It is required of every man and woman that the spirits within them should walk abroad among their fellow human beings and travel far and wide. But if that spirit does not go forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death." Sort of, again, we can hear Dickens is talking. He's saying it is required of all human beings to be open to their fellow human beings of all types, of all suasions. But if we close ourselves off, if we don't come outside our own little narrow bubble, he says, then we will have to wander after death. Doomed to wander through the world and witness what it cannot share, but might have shared in earth and turned to happiness. So this is a condition of being a spirit. You can't do anything. You can only kind of be present to, but you can't do anything anymore. And of course, now Scrooge notices that he's carrying chains. And he says a very pregnant thing. He says, "I wear the chains that I forged in life. I made it link by link, yard by yard. I guided it, I girded it on my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is that pattern strange to you?" So this is very, I think very meaningful. In Buddhism we talk about the chains in prison that we have created through our own actions and of our own mind. And so here, in this much more illustrative way of this man bound in chains, he says, "Yeah, these are the chains. This is my own imprisonment that I have created by my own actions in my life. I made it link by link. Is it pattern strange to you?" he says. "Or would you rather know the weight and length of the strong coil you yourself bear? It is as full and heavy as this. You have labored on it. It is a ponderous chain. Now, at this point, Scrooge realizes that he is talking to the ghost of Marley, his old partner. Right? They were buddies for years. Both pursuing the same goal. But Marley died 7 years ago. And so he's the one coming from the other side to message to Scrooge. So again, Marley is kind of hideous and he's miserable. He's in pain. And Scrooge, of course, is still Scrooge. He goes, "But Jacob, you were always a good man of business." "Business," he replies. "Mankind, humankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence, these were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business." Okay? So let us not only see as Marley and Scrooge having this problem. Many of us are totally focused on our business, whatever that our business is, the things of our life, the things that we pursue. Saying that's only a drop of water in this greater unfolding of life, where our true business is how we relate to each other. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence. See, these are all things of the mind and the heart that have to do with how we relate to each other. And the ghost goes on, "At this time of the roll of the year, I suffer most. Why did I walk through crowds of my fellow beings all those years with my eyes turned down and never raise them? Were there no poor homes to which the light of the wise men could have conducted me?" And Scrooge goes on, basically Marley tells him that I've been actually sitting beside you for many years, invisible. But it's only on Christmas that I'm allowed to kind of manifest. Said, I'm not here just as part of my penance. I'm here tonight to warn you that you still have a chance, a hope of escaping my fate. All right, so Marley is on a mission. He's learned something since his death. About life, and he's come to his brother, Scrooge. Yeah, so let me go on. I mean, it's interesting as Marley exits through the window, as all ghosts do. You know, they exit through the window, and Scrooge looks out after him, and he sees the air is just filled with. These ghosts who are all wearing chains, some linked together, some not, and some of these people he had known in his life. Yeah, anyhow. And he said part of their misery was that they couldn't communicate. You know, they wanted to tell the people they had left behind about how this karma unfolds even after death, how it follows them, but they can't. So again, he is warned, as you remember, by Marley. He says, you know, you will be visited tonight by three spirits. And so just moving on, so this is all unfolding in one night. So it's interesting, the first spirit is the spirit of the past. And I think this is very profound because the key for all of us to unlock our present is the causes and conditions. You've heard me talk about causes and conditions. The causes and conditions. You know, we meet Scrooge in the present. But if we don't really understand what created him, that he did not create himself. He didn't spring from an essential miserliness, kind of a permanent miserliness that just kind of continues through space and time. that he was created by causes and conditions, that he was a human being just like the rest of us. Okay? And we're going to learn that. I think this is what it's very profound. So he's first visited by the spirit of the past. And we don't need to go into the whole description, even though it's a very interesting description. He's got long gray hair, but he's got a face like a child. And I think that's like a whole spectrum of life, the past. But he had a very strange thing, which is from the top of his head, there was this light that went shining out. But he also carried a cap to kind of extinguish it, which he was holding under his arm. And he also had another very strange thing. He had a belt, and the belt kind of just kept shifting. One leg, 20 legs, legs with a head, legs without a head, head without legs, dissolving parts. So he's got a light coming out of the top of his head that illuminates everything. And he's got this belt that's full of shifting shapes. And I think that's kind of giving us a sense that that's what the past is about. It's full of shifting shapes for all of us. Sometimes we see clearly, but mostly we see bits and pieces. A little head here, or a bunch of heads there, or a foot, you know. And most of us, our vision of our past is not very clear. Right? It's kind of muddled like the belt, but there is this light. Now, yeah, Scrooge didn't like the cap. He didn't like the light. He asked him to, put it on. But he said, "I wouldn't do it." He said, "It's because of you guys that I have to wear it." He's really saying it's because we don't like the light on to see ourselves clearly. You, the spirit says, you forced me to wear the bonnet, right? You don't like the light. So Struve's asking, why are you here? For your welfare and your reclamation. And then they walk about. And where does he walk? He walks, and I'll summarize, he walks into Scrooge's past. And again, very simply, it's not an unknown past. He was a child. His mother died at childbirth. His father could never deal with him. His father rejected him. His father sent him away to a boarding school. He lived alone, you know what I mean? He grew up unloved. He grew up rejected. He grew up in this boarding school. Nobody came on the holidays. Everybody went home to their families. He stayed, right? So you can see the pain, the aloneness, the lack of relationship already beginning. And as Scrooge is seeing this, he starts to cry. It's like many of us have never touched the pain. Scrooge has never touched the pain of his life. He's always put it into something else and walled it off. Now he's seen it. The light's on. And then it continues on. He's got a sweet sister. She dies in childbirth. Why does he hate his nephew? Because his sister, who was the only person who was kind to him, she died giving birth, and he did the same thing to his nephew that his father had done to him. He rejected him. It's very interesting. There's a lot going on here. He sees his first boss, Fezziwig, and he's just a great guy. And even though he's in the money trade, he cares about his employees, and it's not just about he's in business, but his business is people, and Scrooge sees that he was happy there. Right? And Scrooge had a fiance when he was young, and so he began to know relationships. But again, a couple of things happened, and he went out on his own. He met up with Marley, and they took advantage of some business opportunities. And eventually his fiancée leaves him. And she says, because another idol has replaced me in your heart. Right? The golden idol has replaced me. And so we see this kind of, you know, in modern parlance, this wounded human being, right, kind of beginning to, over time, from young adulthood on, defining himself solely as a businessman. And as he has less and less human relationships, he has more and more relationships with money. And it goes on. I mean, I would read this. He sees his fiancée now happily married, and then he has a fight with the spirit because he wants to get that light on. He's had it. It's like overwhelming him to see all this. It's too painful. So he kind of gets into a fight trying to get that cap on the guy's head. But then the kind of spirit disappears, and Scrooge once again finds himself in bed. And now he is visited by the second spirit. And the second spirit's interesting. So the first spirit is the spirit of the past, of causes and conditions that have, again, we see Scrooge miserable. We have now learned why he showed up that way. Right? See, and we're very much like Scrooge, right? See, we think we are the way we are because this is the way we are, right? You know what I'm saying? We all think, well, this is who I am. But this is not who we are. See, we think Scrooge is a miserable, rotten, terrible human being. He would be, for all of us, a person of disgust and hatred, right? But now we see, no, he's just a wounded human being. Okay? So we have some understanding. And he's beginning to understand himself. He's having feelings. He cries. He sobs. He doesn't want to look at it. He knows it's too painful. Okay. So now we have the Christmas present. And the Christmas present is really about sort of, and I'll just kind of summarize. It's really about showing him not that one can be an awakened Buddha, a deeply enlightened spiritual being in life, but basically holds up to him the image of kind of a happy worldly being. He just kind of takes him around now. He takes him into various scenarios around the world. You know, when you're a spirit, you can just travel anywhere. He takes him to miners and people in lighthouses and sailors. He takes him to Bob Cratchit's house. He takes him to his nephew's house and basically takes him through a bunch of scenes of people just enjoying each other, you know, being happy, enjoying relationships, being kind to one another, being charitable. He basically, kind of uses the present as an opportunity to show Scrooge that, you know, sort of, one can be a human being and be happy, right? One doesn't have to be alone. One doesn't have to be just focused on monetary gain and work, but that the most important thing in life is relationship, friends, family, you know. Is that clear? So that's really what the kind of and of course, Dickens gets in his shots at lots of different things. He is a social critic. He takes some swipes at the church. Because in those days, a lot of poor people didn't have ovens. So if they wanted to cook, bake anything, they used to take their food, their plates, to the bakers, right? To cook it or to warm it. But I guess at that time, because of the injunction to keep the Sabbath holy, the church authorities had the bakers could not be open 7 days a week. So Dickens takes a swipe at them. And the spirit of Christmas, who I guess is sort of the Christian spirit, says, don't blame me. You know, those are human beings who make those kinds of... And again, you know, we know these days there are all kinds of people in the name of religion say and do things that seem to be quite against the spirit of their religion, and yet do it with a lot of self-righteousness. So he's taking a shot at that. You know, Dickens takes shots wherever he can. Much they saw and far they went, and many homes they visited, but always with a happy end. The spirit stood beside sick beds, and they were cheerful, on foreign lands, and they were close at home by struggling men, and they were patient in their greater hope, by poverty, and it was rich. In almshouses, hospital, and jail, in miseries, every refuge, where vain man in his little brief authority had not made fast the door and barred the spirit out, he left his blessing and taught Scrooge his precepts. And actually, in the same way that we see in the prior chapter, Scrooge, you know, crying and feeling great remorse. Now we actually, in some of these scenes, see him happy, you know, kind of tapping his fingers along to the music and enjoying the games and, you know, kind of getting into it, beginning to see that little nurturance. And so the time for this spirit of present to leave was just coming close. And then Scrooge, who had been kind of looking at the spirit's robes, said, I see something strange and not belonging to yourself protruding from your skirt. Is that a foot or a claw? So he's noticed something. It might be a claw, the spirit replied sorrowfully, for the flesh... there is upon it. Look here. And he opens his robe. And at his feet are two children, wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable, kneeling at his feet. And the ghost says, oh, man, human, woman, look here. And it says they were a boy and a girl, yellow, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish, prostrate too in their humility, where graceful youth should have filled their features out and touched them with its freshest tints, a stale and shriveled hand, like that of old age, had pinched and twisted them and pulled them into shreds, where angels might have sat enthroned, devils lurked and glared out menacingly. No change, no gradation, no perversion of humanity in any grade through all the mystery, through all the mysteries of wonderful creation, as masters, as monsters half so horrible and dread as these two. Scrooge was appalled. He tried to kind of say, oh, but, you know, kind of go, oh, but they're okay, children. But he said he couldn't even say that. He couldn't even lie. It says to pretend that what he was seeing was not the way things were. And Scrooge says to the spirit, are these your children? And the spirit says, looking down on them, no, they are man's, woman's, they are your children. They are our children. And they cling to me in appeal. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware of them both in all of their degree. But most of all, beware this boy. for, and the boy, remember, is ignorance. For on his brow I see written, which is doom, unless the writing be erased. Very powerful, right? I mean, again, and very present, isn't it? You know, he's saying, you know, don't just look upon these children raised in poverty and want, raised in ignorance, beaten down. Don't just look at them as objects of pity and compassion. He said, they are your doom. Right? They're going to grow up. Right? Right? And they are, they're going to carry that suffering with them. And Scrooge says, you know, have they no refuge or resource? Right? And the spirit says, turning to him, are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses? Right? You know, very, very, I think I don't need to comment, right? You get a very meaningful turning. Again, society, the world, we have these same issues today, don't we? And again, is not our response more or less the same? Very profound. Now, so he has been visited by the spirit of the past and the present. He not only has seen kind of his original nature when he was a child and how he became the miserable, lonely, cut off human being he was, he's also seen, he's beginning to, his humanity is waking up. Can you see that? His humanity is waking up. And when his prior words are thrown at him, he winces. You know, ooh, you know, yeah, I did say that, you see? So already, in just a couple of hours, he is changing. So now he is having his final visit. And this is the... is now visited by the spirit, the ghost of the future. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came near, Scrooge bent upon his knee, because the very air which the spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery, shrouded in a deep black garment, concealing its head, its face and form, and all that he could see with one outstretched hand. It was very hard to separate this figure from the darkness. And this mysterious presence filled Scrooge with dread, and especially because the spirit didn't speak. And he says, am I in the presence? Scrooge says, am I in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come? The spirit doesn't answer, just points. Although well used to ghostly company by this time, Scrooge feared this silent shape so much that his leg trembles beneath him, and he could hardly stand to follow him. But Scrooge was all the worse. It thrilled him with a vague, uncertain horror to know that beyond a dusky shroud there were ghostly eyes intently fixed upon him, while he, though he stretched his own to the outmost, could see nothing but a spectral hand in this blackness. Scrooge says, ghost of the future, I fear you more than any specter I have seen tonight. But as I know that your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me? So very profound. Right? So here we see that even now Scrooge has insight into himself, his past, even though he kind of now knows there is another way to live as a human being in much greater goodness, right? In kind of Buddhist way, the laws of cause and effect, the law of karma, is still unfolding, right? And I think that's what he's scared of. So the phantom, again, guides him. And so let me just summarize. So what does Scrooge see? He sees old business associates talking about, in a very caustic way, about one of their colleagues who has died. Talking very, you know, he's alone, who cares? But maybe we'll go to his funeral because maybe there'll be some decent food there. Scrooge kind of goes like, wondering, why has this ghost brought me here? You know, like, why am I listening to this conversation? He takes him to, like, a kind of pawn shop where these three people, this undertaker and these two kind of charwomen, have brought things to sell. You know, like drapes, like bedding, like rings, or just things, you know, like a pen. And he's kind of looking at it and going, gee, those are my things, you see. And they're talking about this miserable human being who died alone, and at least now he's finally, you know, at least they're finally getting something from him. You know, so he's still in denial, but he's kind of going, you know, he goes to Bob Cratchit's house. We really haven't gotten into the story of Bob Cratchit, his assistant. Remember Tiny Tim, who was quite ill in the home. Now Tiny Tim has died. Right, there's a lot of sadness. Tiny Tim has died. And then he takes him to his room, where he sees on the bed there is this figure with really no bedding, but just a dirty sheet on top of him, all alone, nobody's there. He begins to realize that's him. And the last thing, I mean, Scrooge is trying to get him to take him somewhere else, and the phantom keeps pointing. And now where does he end up? What? He ends up, we're all going to end up. He ends up in the graveyard. And the specter is pointing to a grave that's sort of covered with leaves or something. He can't see the name. And Scrooge says, before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point, answer me one question. And this is a question I think we all need to ask. If we go through the same introspective process. Are these the shadows of things that will be, or are they the shadows of things that may be? Only, right? And this is, you know, this is the freedom, right? That when we all do our own introspective journey to really understand the causes and conditions that have created us, created our life, good and bad, right? And when we understand the power of that, how that has conditioned us, how we think, how we feel, how we relate, what we do, when we understand the power of our conditioning, and at the same time begin to understand in the present that there is another way to live, right? You see, all of us then ask that question of what? Can I change? You see? Can I change? Many people go, oh, you know, when we're in this kind of spiritual kind of conundrum beginning, we go, ooh, you know, can I change? I'm so stuck in myself. I'm so stuck in my suffering. I'm so stuck in my habits. You know, isn't this, you know, can I only hope for maybe a little bit of remediation, right? Or can I really change? You see? And that's really what, you know, what Scrooge is seeing. He's seeing, if nothing changes, this is the way it's going to unfold. Right? Why? Because of all these past causes and conditions which are coming into the present, and if we allow them to move through our present, through our life right now, and do not make any significant change, they will unfold. Are these the things that will be, or are they the things that may be? Still the ghost pointed downward to the grave. Men's courses, this is Scrooge, will foreshadow certain ends, to which if persevered in, they must lead, cause and effect. But if the causes be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me. So again, he's really saying, hold on, you know. I mean, I realize that this is cause and effect, and you show me it will change, but can't the end be changed if the conditions change? Tell me that. Of course, the spirit is immovable, just keeps pointing. Scrooge eventually follows the finger and he sees the name, Ebenezer Scrooge. He realizes he was that figure laid out in bed. And spirit, and so when he sees Ebenezer Scrooge on the grave, he says, no. And he clutches at the robe of the spirit. Hear me, I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been but for tonight. Why show me this if I am past all hope? Good spirit, he says, and he prostrates before him. Your nature intercedes with me, has compassion for me, pity me. Assure me that I may change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. And for the first time, you know, that hand that was kind of just always pointing began to tremble. And then Scrooge says, I will honor Christmas in my heart, and I will try to keep it the whole year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they have taught me. Oh, tell me that I may sponge away the writing on this stone. I mean, do I need to comment? I think it's quite powerful, right? And again, it is a powerful journey. He has journeyed in just a few hours deeply into the darkness of himself and life. And he's learned. He's come out the other end, right? He says, he doesn't say, it's not like he's changed. But his perspective has changed, right? And he's saying, now I see that I can lead a good life. I will do it. And so he, in his agony, he grabs that hand. And the hand sought to free itself. But Scrooge was so strong in his entreaty, he held it. And the spirit, stronger yet, repulsed him. Holding up his hands in the last prayer to have his face reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, it collapsed, and dwindled down to a doorpost, a bedpost. So he's back in bed. He has returned. His journey is complete. Can you see it? It's been quite a journey. And he's back in bed. In the same way, we all have our experiences. We all have our encounters through many, many different ways, right? But at the end of the day, we always find ourselves back in bed with ourselves. Right? You see, whatever heights of ecstasy and insight, whatever, you know, depths of misery we have plumbed in our life, we still come back to what? Our life. We are still here. Yeah, and that's, I think, what's happening. Right? Scrooge is still here. He's in bed. And he scrambles out of bed. He says, I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and Christmas time be praised. On my knees, old Jacob, on my knees, I promise this. Right? And then he begins to realize that he's alive and that it's actually Christmas morning. And he is so happy. So he sort of had his own little enlightenment experience. It's all of a sudden this whole heaviness, this whole miserable heaviness of how he'd always lived and identified himself, he's free of it. And he's still alive. It wasn't just a hallucination. He's still alive. And he says, I don't know what to do. He's laughing. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. And Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to everybody. Whoa, and he's just running around in his dressing gown, just a total madman. And he's just so excited. And he just laughs. And Dickens comments, for a man who had been out of practice for so many years, it was a splendid laugh, a most illustrious laugh. The father of a long line of brilliant laughs. Again, quite beautiful. And I think it speaks to us because it really, and it speaks again to our Buddha Dharma, because we are told we are all Buddhas, right? When we bowed early, we bowed to the awakened nature in each of us, right? Right. And now, it's like he's touched that, right? Even though he's got 70 plus years of absolute misery and selfishness and narcissism, because of his journey that evening, he has returned, right? His eyes are fresh. He is renewed. And he's just what? He's just so happy to be alive. And that he knows he can now live differently. Starting when? See, many of us think we'll start our transformation and change at some point in the future, right? At some point in the future, when I'm enlightened, then I'll act like a Buddha. You see? But now I'm just a miserable human being and I just have to work through my issues, right? Mm-mm. I mean, look at Scrooge. He did it in one night. And most of us would say to ourselves, I'm not as bad as him, right? I mean, we look at him, we go, wow, I mean, he really was a miserable human being with absolutely no relations at all. And no human, I mean, his immunity was so dead, right? And yet in one night, because he was willing, well, he wasn't willing, he was forced to do this really journey, introspective journey, and this opening, he was able to come out the other side. And he was happy, not only because he was free of that heaviness that he'd been carrying his whole life, but because he now had an opportunity to do it differently. And again, in the last chapter, you know, he does things differently. You know, what does he do? He brings food. He brings a big turkey or something. You know, to Bob Cratchit's house, and he says, I will take care of Tiny Tim, and I will give you a raise. And you know, people think he's gone mad. You know, he runs into those two gentlemen who had come to see them, and which he had pushed away, and now he says to them, he whispers in their ear some, you know, great amount that he will give them, and he goes to his nephew's house for Christmas. His nephew invited him, and you know, I can't believe it's like when he shows at the door, it's like, what? But he comes in and he's happy and he's so, and they can't, they're so happy to have him. And so it ends. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became a good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as anyone in the old city of London knew, or any other city in the world. People laughed to see the alteration in him, but let them laugh. He little heeded them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good, at which some people do not have their fill of laughter at the outset. Knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. You see what I'm saying? He didn't care what other people thought. I mean, people going, that's Scrooge, you know, God, who does he, you know, he's probably not for real. It's probably, you know, blah, blah, you know. He doesn't care what people think about him. Many of us care what people think about us. We don't want to change too much, right? Because we don't care what people may say about us, or think about us. People who've known us for a long time, right? Scrooge didn't care. And he was even happy that they were laughing at him because they could have been angry at him. He said, you know, they're laughing. It's giving them happiness. Good. He was more, his own heart was laughing, and that was quite enough for him. And so that's the abbreviated version of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Again, I think it's a spiritual classic. That's what I would say. I would say It has great meaning, wisdom, and great inspiration for all of us. And again, I think Dickens, I have to think that any man who could write this like Dickens had to have a real depth in him. He was more than just a great writer or had a social conscience, you know what I mean? Which is obviously in it, but he had a real sense of how human beings can transform themselves, which I think is very profound. So, thank you. So I know the children will be coming in soon, but this weekend we've had a meeting of our board of directors for the Faculty of Mindfulness.